This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour three, Sharp Money, moving along here on this Thursday, the first day of August. Dustin, you know what that means. It is officially football season. We've got the Hall of Fame game tonight, opened the show talking about it. We'll get back to it in a little bit, but because of the release of our college football betting guide today, because of the Hall of Fame game tonight, Dustin, we have not gotten to any of the day's MLB action yet. And it's a pretty light slate. I believe only five, maybe six games on the docket for tonight. But Dustin, there's a couple, not many, a couple that jump out on me. And one of them is Seth Lugo and the Royals taking on the Detroit Tigers. Keeter Montero on the bump for Detroit. What do you like in this one, Dustin?
It feels too good to be true, Joe, and that concerns me. It just feels so obvious what to do in this game because you go through Keiter Montero on the bump for the Tigers. He stinks with a capital S. Five earned runs allowed in his last three starts, maximum five and a third innings pitched. So it just feels like you have to find a way to fade him. I don't love backing the Kansas City Royals bats. Really wanted them to add someone alongside Paul DeJong to be into the mix in this lineup. So the obvious thing for me is let's take the better pitcher, let's shorten up the game, back him, and hope that Montero implodes. So I'm going to go first five on Kansas City, man. I'm laying a half run. I think I got like minus 104 on it. That feels like a very reasonable price to pay. Better team, significantly better pitcher, a team that knows that they're playing for the postseason versus a team in the Tigers who knows the season's over after trading Jack Flaherty.
Yeah, I'm with you 1,000% on this. It's actually, I only had two MLB bets today, and this is one of them, so it's a coincidence we're in sync here. Maybe that's great news, maybe that's terrible news. We'll see, we'll find out. Now, you can approach this two ways. You can take the full game run line, lay a run and a half. They're on the road, so by my rules and my laws of betting baseball run lines, I would allow it because they're the road team. You can get plus money, plus $1.05. Or you can lay 15 cents a difference here and go first five run line. I got it at minus 110. That's why I say lay 15 cents. Yeah. I think this is the safer bet. It eliminates any bullpen variables, anything happening crazy late. Because I was looking at some Detroit games and what's happened late. Those Dodger games, right? Two of those went to extra innings. A lot of late fireworks there. One of them, Montero pitched. The Dodgers lit him up. They were trailing after five, and then they won it, I think, 12-11 in 10 innings or something crazy like that. So that's why I'm with you on the first five here. Seth Lugo has actually been better on the road this season, Dustin, than he has at home. On the road, 11 starts, a 2.5 ERA, a .216 opponent batting average. Kansas City has won outright 8 of his 11 road starts in the first five. I mentioned the opponent batting average. Detroit in their last 10 games hitting under 200, 196 as a team in their last 10. Montero has allowed 5 earned in 3 straight starts. Love the Royals' first five run line here today.
And let's simplify things a little bit more for bettors out there, right? The reason to go first five here is we want to fade Montero, the starter for Detroit. Well, he will only be in the first five innings. Don't anticipate him going very deep into this game. With that, we believe that the starter for Kansas City, Lugo, is a significant advantage over Montero. Because of that, you have to attack it in the first five market. Don't let the bullpen play a role in this because our vibe is that Lugo is going to shut down a Detroit lineup that doesn't put the ball in play, doesn't score a lot of runs, and that Montero is going to get lit up by Kansas City to a degree. So because of that, that's why I like the first five even more in this matchup. I also wouldn't be against you if you were looking at some props from Seth Lugo tonight, just because Detroit, Seattle, these are offenses that I like to back pitchers against. Again, not a lot of pop, not a lot of power. You don't have to worry about them, and pitchers tend to go deeper into games against them.
Yeah, so I was trying to find an angle there on Lugo, and I'll pull up some of the
numbers
props
are
here.
Really sharp.
It was just, you know, I couldn't find any value on the board looking
that's the
for Lugo.
Issue.
That was my first look, right? I mean, you can go over 4.5 strikeouts, which I think he'll get to five or six against Detroit. He's gone over this mark actually in 6 of his last 7, but you're laying $1.60. Now, if you go to a different book, right, because that's DraftKings, the number's 4.5 minus 160. You can go to FanDuel, go over 5.5 at plus 112. Now he's done that in 5 of his last 7 starts, so not 6 out of 7, but pretty close. I don't want to play around with that. Just give me the Royals are finally hitting.
It feels
this offense has been bad so long this season. They're finally hitting. Bobby Witt's hitting like 500 over the last 31 days. They add Paul DeJong. They feel rejuvenated because they were buyers at the trade deadline, which shocked a lot of people. So just buy in on the whole team here. Buy in on Lugo and the bats in the first five. We're on the same page.
Yeah.
I think we also have action in the Cardinals-Cubs game, albeit different bets in this one. Sonny Gray going for San Luis against Shota Imanaga for the Cubs. A rare night game in Wrigleyville, Dustin. There's some rain on the forecast. What do you like in this one?
Yeah, so look, Imanaga, it's totally being lost because the hot start hit a bit of a rough patch, but really he's picked it up again. It's being overblown. Like, we're not paying enough attention because Paul Skenes is so good, right? And because Imanaga is an older rookie, but he's been really, really reliable for the Cubs this year. Like, and St. Louis is a team he's pitched really well against. 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned, 6 strikeouts back on June 15th against the Cardinals. And that's a trend. St. Louis Cardinals do not hit lefties. They are 29th in baseball. That is second to last in OPS against southpaws. And on the other side of the hill, I have a lot of concerns as someone with St. Louis Cardinals futures tickets about Sonny Gray. A lot of my handicapping was Sonny Gray being their guy, their ace in the playoffs. Sonny Gray's even money on the road against Imanaga. I cannot support that. He has allowed 18 earned runs over his last 4 starts. He has a 6.75 ERA in the month of July. He is absolutely falling apart when St. Louis needs him the most here, Joe. I cannot back him until he fixes whatever is wrong, if he can even fix what's wrong. The only way I can look, Imanaga is the better pitcher. I like some of the moves the Cubs made at the deadline, adding guys more for next year, but Paredes is already hitting in this lineup. Let's back Chicago here because Imanaga is a lefty. St. Louis can't hit lefties. I like the Cubs in this one.
Dustin, I like it a lot. My only concern is the weather in Chicago. So I like your handicap. I like everything that you just said about, you know, the Cubs currently having the edge because Imanaga hit his little slump. He's back in a groove. Sonny Gray is going through that slump now. But I went to the Nerfy because when weather's a factor, I wanted to really shorten my handicap to the first inning. Even though Sonny Gray has really struggled in July, he's got good career numbers against these Cubs hitters. 90 at-bats against him. They have just 7 extra base hits. He's also 14-4 so far this season to the Nerfy. And Imanaga on the other side, 17-2 to the Nerfy. 1 great start against St. Louis already under his belt. The Cardinals don't fare well against lefties. So I like everything you said in terms of a full game handicap. The weather makes me want to shorten the handicap to the first inning. That's why I laid $1.40 to go with the Nerfy here. Now my question, Dustin, for you, because of the weather, 65% chance of precipitation in Chicago all the way up until I think 10 p.m. Central time. Does that make you look at potentially under 17.5 outs for both of these pitchers? Imanaga +145, Sonny Gray +125.
So I really like where your head's at. I love this strategy, but it's hard enough for me to bet and hit 52, 54% on sports. If you want me to bet and be right on the weather, that is a whole nother ball game that I am not fit to handicap. I failed earth science. I failed physics. I failed biology. We are not in my wheelhouse. You want to talk sports? I think I got a feel for things to a degree. You want to talk science and weather? I am not betting on that.
Meteorology and baseball, 2 professions where you can do well 30% of the time and be considered Hall of Famer in your respective industry. I don't know, man. To me, it's worth a sprinkle, right? Because a lot can happen to hit that under 17.5 out mark on a normal day, right? I mean, one guy could have a 10-pitch at-bat, a lot of foul balls. You know, Sonny Gray could implode. He's got an ERA of 6.75 in July.
He
could implode on a sunny day and go under. Now you're telling me +125? I mean, if those guys split, albeit a small profit, you're making money even if you go 1-1 there.
I like it more for Gray than Imanaga. Imanaga feels like a guy that, like, somehow he thrives in the rain. I don't know. Everything about him we've been totally wrong about.
Marvel superhero or something?
Yeah, like, dude, he just seems, like, malleable. Like, he can just roll with the punches. He's like, Lightning, who cares? Let's stay out here and play. I'll be fine. Like, he just seems like a different kind of cool cat. Sonny Gray, though, I mean, you're right. There's a chance if the weather was absolutely perfect, he still wouldn't reach that number. So I like that one.
You know what, man? I'm doing it right now. While we're on air, I'm pulling trigger on both. I'm double dipping because I'm like,
okay. This also plays into my thing, though. When you bet player props, there's always more helping you if you're betting the under than the over. You have to
absolutely.
You always have so much more to work on with the over. With the under, there are so many variables at play that could happen that Sonny Gray would fail to reach that and you would win your bet.
Yeah, absolutely. One of those guys gets lit up, you're making money. Like I said, small profit, but they're both plus money plays. One, you know, Imanaga plus 145. Sonny Gray plus 125. So I did it. Added two to my card. I had two bets on the card. Hey, I just added two more.
We learned a lesson on this show yesterday. When you and I start talking through things, we need to place those bets. Because I think we were like 3-1 with bets we loved. And we're like, you know what, though? I think we're going to stay away.
Yeah, we both fired away on the Reds first five-run line. And Nick Lodolo goes out there and looks like an absolute schmuck who shouldn't have a job. And then we talk about the Padres team total first five because Clayton Kershaw hasn't looked good. I mean, well, didn't look good at his first start back. And we're like, the Padres are piping hot. They're going to score two runs in the first five, right? What do? They go over it in the second inning with a little four-run outburst. We just didn't lay the juice. In all fairness, though, it was minus 140 when we were talking about it on air. When we signed off, the number I got was minus 155.
Yeah. No, but I also cease under innings. And he got there by, you know, a third of an inning, and it was plus, like, 114. So I regret that one.
That was a sweat, though. Like, I mean, he looked great. It was just the pitch count got high on
him. No, he was cruising, and I was like, thank God I was wrong.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, more NFL. We're going to revisit some stuff with our guy Dan Orlovsky after this on Sharp Money. Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is available now. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, and more. So sign up today and receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data, and more. See all of our subscription options at VSiN.com/subscribe and pick the plan that works for you only at VSiN.com/subscribe. As we continue here on hour three of Sharp Money, Joe Cirillo in this week for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, I think we had one of my favorite guests of all time on earlier. I will say last 2 days, we've had two guys who played in the league who talk about football, I think, better than just about anyone. Lige Doosable yesterday. Of course, different perspectives. Doosable, a defensive lineman, could talk more about the battle in the trenches, defenses. And then Dan Orlovsky, who is just an absolute quarterback guru on the show today, man. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Dan here momentarily. But first, I want to throw some breaking news I'm just seeing now coming down the wire. Being reported by Paul Kaharsky down in Tennessee, DeAndre Hopkins suffered a strained knee injury Wednesday or Thursday. Indications are he could miss 4 to 6 weeks. So that is a big, big, big loss potentially for this Titans offense. So they did the math there, did Kaharsky. If Hopkins returns to action after 4 weeks, he would have 1 week to prepare for the season opener in Chicago. If he misses 6 weeks out, he'd miss the Bears game and could be ready just before the week two home opener against the Jets.
And those are, I would say, if Tennessee is going to have, you know, an intriguing game to back them early in that schedule, obviously so many new pieces there for the Titans, including the head coach, Brian Callahan. Yep. That week one game, which, you know, has been talked about here on Sharp Money this week, is an intriguing matchup, catching 4.5 points against a rookie quarterback.
Yeah. It's an opportunity to steal a game, right, that a lot of people are counting you out of, and that win total set at 6.5. I actually really like the Titans, but I have concerns about the schedule, which is why I'm not quite there firing on the schedule. It feels, or on the win total, it feels like they're a team that's going to be fun to back week in and week out. Not because I know for sure what kind of Coach Callahan is, or I know what Will Levis is going to be, but I think Will Levis showed an ability to sling it last year. Like, I really liked his aggressive nature, chucking the ball downfield. I didn't anticipate that because I did not see an aggressive guy guy at Kentucky in college. So I really like that. Callahan brings over a system he learned with Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. And I think they have three really good veteran receivers who should help get him acclimated right into this new system. I like the addition of Boyd. I like the addition of Ridley. Across the board, good. But you take Hopkins out of the fold, all of a sudden you take away that deep ball. I think it does limit the things this offense can do.
Yeah, with Hopkins, you're getting obviously a guy who is a little older, a little long in the tooth now, but really a tremendous physical. Was never a 4-2 burner, but a physical receiver who anything you throw in his direction, he's got a chance to make the play, especially in the red zone. A guy who would probably be Levis's favorite red zone target this season. Now, what you're going to get here with Callahan and Levis in year one is an answer. I'm not that high on Will Levis. I'm kind of like you. Like, I just haven't seen that it factor that makes him, you know, quote unquote, the dude.
I'm intrigued.
In an NFL locker room.
I would say I am more intrigued than I thought during the draft process. I was very low on him. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of intrigued. However, I did bet him this week 23-1 to lead the league in interceptions.
There you go. That's a bet I could get behind. Like I said, I'm not high on him. I'm not going to hide that. I'm not going to pretend, you know, I'm not going to take a middle stance here. I don't like Will Levis, but I will say you're going to have an answer now that he's working with Brian Callahan as to whether or not he can be the guy there. That's what you're going to get this year. You're not going to get success this year, but you're going to get an answer this year as to whether or not you ride with him or you abort.
And that's why I like the interception bet, because the whole goal of this year, find out if he's the guy. And if he's not the guy, be sure and move on. Because of that, he has a long leash. Kelly Bidlin and I talked through this bet on Sunday, on Live Bet Sunday, and the more we just hashed it out, we were both in agreement that that is a great number on a guy that should get a lot of starts. You can't bet Bo Nix in this market because there's a chance, one, he doesn't start right away, but two, if he gets into a lot of trouble, they don't want to hurt his development and they'll pull him out of games. So because of, and there's other situations around the league kind of similar. Will Levis, they're riding with him. They're dying with him. They have nothing to lose. Just find out if he's a franchise quarterback.
Derrick Henry is not there anymore. No more conservative play calling. Mike Vrabel is not the coach anymore there. It's not going to be ground and pound play defense. They're going to air it out. They've got a pretty respectable receiving core. Air it out. See what happens. I love, the more we talk about it, the more I love that play, Dustin. Now, there's another quarterback in the AFC South that there are no questions attached as to how I feel about him, and that's C.J. Stroud for MVP, for Super Bowl champ, for president at this point. Just give me C.J. Stroud. I love this kid. Dustin, got some great stuff talking to Dan Orlovsky earlier about C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, let's hear from the ESPN NFL analyst. He joined us earlier in the show. If you missed any part of that, available at VSiN.com in the replay section. Also, download the show anywhere you get your podcast. Just search Sharp Money. And this was Dan Orlovsky when you asked him about C.J. Stroud in his sophomore season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've said all offseason that I think the Texans are trying to become the Bengals from a couple years ago, where very early on they were like, oh, we got one. And not just a good player. We got a guy that, you know, can take us to the Super Bowl and win one. And that's why you saw the offseason that they had. You know, and I've said that the success of CJ and this team and offense last year was a little bit of a mirage, because he was so good, but even better on third downs. And they weren't good offensively on first down, ran the football not productively. And it really put him in bad situations. And he was still that good. And so if they're able to just be a little bit better on those early downs, because you're just not going to survive in the NFL. I don't care how good you are. You know, he's 3rd and 7+. Oh, great. Our quarterback was 7 of 10 on third down. We win. So you're not going to survive in the league like that. So if they could be a little bit better on early downs, I think he and that offense will be even better. And, you know, the additions that they made onto their defense, you know, Danielle Hunter led the NFL in negative plays last year. So Stingley could be one of the best cover corners that we have in the league. So respectfully, the schedule being difficult, this team is very similar to what the Bengals were when they went to the Super Bowl against the Los Angeles Rams.
So, Joe, I get where you're coming from with Houston and C.J. Stroud, where look how awesome they are. It should keep going up. I want to be in the camp with you. It's so hard in the NFL to repeat success the way that they did and the way these guys are going to dissect this team. And that is why I can't quite get on board on your end of things, which is why I asked Dan Orlovsky about them. What's it like going from the hunter to the hunted this year? And this is what he had to say.
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think there's two things that helps Houston in this situation. So Bobby Slowick comes from San Francisco under Kyle Shanahan, so that tree couple things. One, that scheme that came from his father, Mike Shanahan, and Gary Kubiak, and then Kyle and Sean McVay, it's been around the NFL for 50 years. And it's not the scheme schematically that is, I guess, quote-unquote, difficult to defend. They're not reinventing football plays. It is the way that that scheme is so attached to every play in the playbook. And it's really the great illusion of, are you running it? Are you play action? Is it quick game? Is it a screen? Everything looks the same. And that has been the case for 40 or 50 years when you're good at it. Slowick is. And so that keeps defenses very hesitant and on their heels. The second thing is, you have to be diversified on offense, both in people and what those people can do, to keep defensive coordinators from really being able to know your tendencies and pick up on some of the things that give them matchup advantages. So that's why I like Houston's offensive skill set, is you're talking Dalton Schultz and Brevin Jordan at tight end. Two different players, but they're athletic. They can work the middle of the field. But what tight end do you want to treat as a blocker? What tight end do you want to treat as a pass catcher? Nico Collins has become a real number one wide receiver that you better have somebody that can play man-to-man against them. And then Stephon Diggs is the guy that can work in the zones and really be a high-volume pass-catching guy. Tank Dell is the vertical threat. And so you have all these different pieces that really thrive in very specific roles that you have to be able to handle when it comes to the personnel that you match up with. And you don't necessarily – you can't cover everyone type of thing. So I think the scheme with the way that it's kind of connected and then the people, you know, really kind of – counters some of the philosophy behind getting the information on the quarterback.
Dustin, I'm convinced that you just included that clip there so you could brag to everyone about Dan Orlovsky saying, that's a really great question. I think that's the only reason that you wanted to include that.
I mean, that played a big role in why I like the answer, because he told me I did a good job. I'm very impressionable. If you tell me you like me, I'm going to like you. Till further notice, though, I don't like people until they tell me they like me.
Is that why I've been feeling kind of a cold vibe from you all week? Because I haven't outwardly said I like you.
No. I know you like me, and I know enough about you.
I have told you everyone's favorite part of the show numerous times.
But that's easy, because it's like, compare me to Patrick. Like, Patrick is what everyone's jealous of. He's good-looking. He's charismatic. And I'm just this grotesque Shrek monster sitting here by myself in a casino.
I don't even know how to respond to that. I do know I want to get those pictures you sent me of high school, Dustin, on air at some point, but I don't know how to respond to that. Mitch Moss joins us when we come back on Sharp Money. Don't go anywhere, guys. Sharp Money moves along here on this Thursday, August 1st. Final half hour of the show coming at you. I'm Joe Cirillo, in for Patrick Maher all week, alongside Dustin Swedelson. And Dustin, you know, as we talk about the release of our 2024 college football betting guide today, a lot of in-house guest spots and interviews, man. I'm excited for this one. My first time talking to him. So let's hit the progressive guest line and welcome in from Follow the Money, our show weekdays 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Mitch Moss. Mitch, how you doing, man?
Fellas, happy to be on the show. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, it's great. Great to have you. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Mitch Moss about Miller Moss. So we've been having so much Heisman discussion on this show today. Let's jump in with one of your long shot tickets. You got a little action on Miller Moss out there at USC?
Yeah, and I promise it's not because he's my third cousin, which he technically isn't, but I like to say it on the air anyway. Look, this was only, and I think you can have like a really long discussion on betting the Heisman this year because of the new landscape of college football, all these teams are playing each other, and how many guys you can make a case for. And I'm not betting, hell, we don't even know if like Miller Moss is going to be the full-time starting quarterback for this team throughout the season because of what they did in the offseason. But you know, I'm not going to take him at 20 or 25 to 1. There was a book in town recently, the Westgate, that had 60 to 1 on him. So I thought, okay, well, when you go back and look at the history of quarterbacks under Lincoln Riley as the head coach and what they have done and where they have finished in Heisman voting, it's impossible to ignore what they have done. I mean, in his first year ever as the head coach at Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield won the award. The year after that, Kyler Murray won the award. The year after that, if it wasn't for Joe Burrow's unbelievable season, Jalen Hurts could have won it because he finished second. And then you had the pandemic year, some weirdness with Spencer Rattler. He, you know, left during that Texas game. Caleb Williams came in that game, set the world on fire. Then he transferred to USC with Riley. He won it year number one. So he's had three quarterbacks win the award. And Mason Miller at 60-1, you know, if they happen to pull off a couple of these wins early on in September, could be looking at like 15-20-1 at that point, maybe even a little bit lower than that. He's going to put up great numbers if he's the guy. The question is, can the defense be good enough to win them enough games? So at that number, to me, I had to make that bet.
But Mitch, even if the defense isn't good and they're bad again, there's more shootouts and opportunities to put up bigger numbers for him. So, look, I can't argue if anyone has conviction in the Heisman market this year with all the chaos that's about to ensue with the 12-team playoff, with these different kind of schedules where it's no longer the mentality of one loss and the season's over. I think we're opening ourselves up for a lot more guys to be in the mix. And you're talking about Moss coming back to USC. Continuity matters to me. Look at the three finalists last year. Jaden Daniels, 4-year starter, 2 years at LSU. Michael Penix Jr., 2 years at Washington. Bo Nix, 2 years at Oregon, which is why your other bet in the Heisman for Jalen Milrow intrigues me, because he's now a multi-year starter down there in Tuscaloosa.
It's a good point. So coming back, some continuity there for sure. They would rank up there with the stability rankings in terms of him being back in some other plays as well. And, you know, again, going back to Daniels for a second, LSU lost three games last year. So a team can lose, miss the playoffs in previous years anyway, and still have a chance for their best player to win the award. And with Milrow, you know, last year it was a total roller coaster because he did not play well in that second week against Texas, the one in which the Longhorns went to Alabama and then won the game. And it was very impressive by Texas in that spot. He did not even play the week after that. He was benched, came back, and everybody said, uh-oh, this kid is not going to be the guy for Nick Saban. Well, what happened? They're like a fluky loss away against Michigan, in my opinion, of playing Washington for the entire thing last year. And a lot of it was because of this guy. And if you look at from the game where he came back after Texas to the game against Georgia in the SEC title game, 18 touchdowns in the air. He ran for 10 more. Saban, to me, best coach college football history. However, Kalen DeBoer, unbelievable last 2 years and a great offensive mind with Michael Penix. So now you have that combo going. And again, I'll bring this up because all these teams play with each other. I'm from Wisconsin. The Badgers are not going to beat Alabama when they host in Madison. I would love it if they would. As a fan, they're not going to beat them. So I would anticipate Alabama going to Wisconsin, winning that game. And then they have a bye week and a rematch against Georgia at home. What's Milrow to win the Heisman if he plays well in their 4-0 with two wins over Wisconsin and Georgia? He's not. He's going to be like 3-1 maybe.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, I think he's a more talented quarterback than Michael Penix Jr. So you have that going for you as well. I love the play. One of the main reasons why we brought you on here, Mitch, is because I went through everyone's picks in the college football betting guide that was released today at VSiN.com, and I saw that you had Miami winning the ACC. I want to take you back to a few years ago. You and me, Paulie Howard, follow the money on the road, Foxwoods Casino. I say, hey, guys, I have to go upstairs. Mario Cristobal's having his first press conference as Miami head coach, and I'm fired up. And you said, the guy can recruit, but he can't coach. Why are you so excited? And I have to tell you, to this point, you have been correct. He has lost games on the margins for this team. But what they've done recruiting-wise has been insane. So for you to go and pick this team, knowing how you feel about Cristobal as a head coach, I think that speaks volumes, and I wanted you to elaborate on the bet.
Okay, so there's a lot in play here. And quite honestly, a couple of our guests this week really put me over the edge on Miami anyway, because I was a little ambivalent. I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do with the ACC, specifically with the guide coming out today. We had to have our picks in. You know, I wanted to get mine in a couple of weeks back. And, you know, when we consider everything that Florida State lost and Clemson, and I actually, if I don't like a coach in the country, maybe even at a, you know, I'll say this, if I had to rank them, who would I have as the better coach? And actually, I might have Cristobal overall, top to bottom, 365 days a year better than Dabo Sweeney.
Wow.
That guy, to me, is completely lost. Not embracing the transfer portal, that kind of a deal. Just no thank you. You can have him. And when you look, those are two big question marks. This is not the Clemson ACC, and you could argue that no other team in college football really has fallen off like Clemson has in recent years, because they were it. They surpassed Alabama as like the best program in the country, and it lasted for like 15 minutes. That is no longer the case. And when you just break down the talent, and despite me having those thoughts about Mario Cristobal, and how could you ever forget what happened against Georgia Tech? Just take a knee. The game is over with. Don't do something that stupid where you run the football end the game. They didn't. They lost the game. Stuff like that. He pulled that kind of crap with Oregon as well, and I can't get it out of my head. However, when you compare the talent and look at, like, unit-by-unit rankings, you know, Cam Ward comes in from Washington State, who had an up-and-down career, but there's a lot to like with him if they can get it fixed. The running back, Martinez comes from Oregon State. Outstanding running back. The receivers are awesome. The O-line is really good. They rate, like, either the best unit across the board in that entire conference at several spots, or they're, like, number two or number three. So talent-wise, I think there's a clear edge there for Miami. I just have to hope that bozo doesn't blow enough games, you know, to cost me that ticket that I bet on him.
I guess.
Well, you can doubt Cristobal's abilities as a head coach, but you can't doubt his recruiting abilities and the way he poached from that dismantled Pac-12 to really restack his offense. Mitch Moss joining us, of course, host of Follow the Money. Make sure you catch him weekdays, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on VEASAN. Mitch, you know, it's funny. When you look at the Power Four conferences, you've got the SEC and the Big Ten, and then you've got some space, and then the Big 12 and the ACC. But I want to shift from the ACC to the Big 12 because I am really intrigued by Cam Rising, one of the few college football players out there, or few notable college football players out there, who I think might actually be older than me as he returns for year 7 with Utah. Are you as high on the Utes this year as I am?
Yeah, it's scary how many of us here at the network and beyond are super high on Utah. I look at it several different ways with this team. First of all, they're coming in. They were completely decimated by injuries last year. Anywhere that you read, any recap that you do from last year, people are calling it like the unluckiest year ever for any team with injuries. That's how many they had. It was all across the board. Doesn't matter. They still won a bunch of games because Whittingham is such a good coach. They also are going to come into this league from the best Pac-12 we've ever had in the history of the conference last year. They're going to enter a Big 12 with no Texas and no Oklahoma. They're getting Rising back like you talked about. I think they have playmakers at pretty much every unit across the ball. Whittingham is elite. Home field, as good as it gets. They've won 9-plus games 13 times since 2003. So wow. At the very top, challengers here are K-State for sure. They don't play each other in the regular season. I'm concerned. September 21st, it can get wonky in Stillwater. They could lose that game, and then I don't know exactly how they're going to navigate it because will this conference get two teams in the playoffs? That seems a little dicey to me, but as long as they win the Big 12, which I think they can do it, and I love the talent, I love the coach, and I don't think the league is that good, to be honest. So if they can get by Okie State September 21st, I think that the path is going to be set for this team, and the coast is going to be clear then for them to get in.
Great stuff. Mitch, we appreciate the time. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mitch Moss Radio and tune in to Follow the Money weekdays, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on VEASAN.
Thanks, guys.
Dustin.
Awesome.
Dustin, you look at that Utah schedule we just put up on the screen here really quick, last 20, 30 seconds or so. I mean, 9.5 over juiced minus $1.45. Those are some lofty numbers, but I see this team going 11-1. Those final 7 games there, that's as easy as it gets in conference.
40-1, by the way, Cam Rising for Heisman. He's 25 years old, still younger than you. That team's always physical. They don't shoot themselves in the foot. As Mitch said, if they have better luck when it comes to health, they're going to be scary in the Big 12.
Yeah, only 11 months younger than me, by the way. We wrap up Sharp Money after this. Don't go anywhere.
Coming back here, VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network. And if you haven't gone to VEASAN.com to place any of your bets for today, you are missing out. Adam Burke breaking down everything in the world of baseball. Josh Applebaum tells you where the sharp money is going so you can be a smarter bettor. And, of course, you go to the website right there at the top. Download the College Football Betting Guide out today. Brand spanking new information you can't get anywhere else. Trends from Steve Mackinnon, Adam Burke on how to put together your power ratings, plus best bets from incredibly attractive people, Dustin Sweetelson and Joe Cirollo. All of that and more available to you at VSIN.com. Welcome back to Sharp Money. He's Joe. I'm Dustin. We are both very attractive. It's just my camera has a wider look to his. He has a more like thinly narrow camera. That's the difference here. And a great head of hair.
I spent the big bucks on it, Dustin. I was like, I need a camera that makes me look like I'm 6'4", 185, you know, 5% body fat and a chiseled jawline. And so that was what I invested in when I moved out to LA.
I should acknowledge this because I'm getting a lot of DMs about it. You know, I was gone for 3 weeks, Joe. And I just want to say I find it offensive, the amount of people in my DMs asking me if I spent my vacation in Turkey to get hair plugs. Like, if I was going to get hair plugs, they would look better than this. That's all I would say.
Would they look better than Joe Bucks? That's the question.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't almost die from them, unfortunately, like him. That's the scariest story of all time. It really makes me not want to get them. But don't you think if I got hair plugs, I would get rid of this giant forehead and start it lower where hair is supposed to start?
I personally think that you're a great-looking guy, Dustin. You know, they're doing you dirty there. Is this really happening?
My hair is the only thin thing about me.
I mean, it certainly isn't what it was in those pictures you sent me of high school, college, Dustin. I still want to get those on air.
One day.
Sometime in the next 8.5 minutes. You know, it's funny you mentioned my hair, though. I'm very thankful. I have a grandfather down in Florida because, you know, I'm Italian. You're Jewish. What do Italian and Jewish New Yorkers do when they get old? They move to Boynton Beach. So my Italian grandfather married a Jewish woman. They moved to Boynton Beach. Naturally, he was told, wasn't asked if he would move. He was told he would move to Boynton Beach. And my grandpa just turned 80. And when I say that this guy still has a beautiful full head of hair, it is so encouraging. Because they say it's your mom's dad is where you get your hair. So my mom's dad is 80. Still has a great head of hair, still walks 3 miles a day, can still do like 20 push-ups. I mean, I think that qualifies him for president, doesn't it, Dustin? In today's world, he's 80 and can do 20 push-ups and walk 3 miles. Doesn't that qualify you for president?
He definitely fits the profile, but does he make sense when he speaks? Because I think if he does, he can't be eligible.
Yeah, that's the thing. He makes too much sense when he speaks. You can actually understand him. I don't know. I think that would work. He was a butcher, so he's good with a knife.
Oh.
I think that right there would help him pull a lot of people in this country.
Well, speaking of knives, a guy who went under the knife and unfortunately won't be back later in the year, we should touch on this briefly, but officially announced, Mike Trout done for the year with the Angels. So gets robbed of another season. He'll be 33 in 6 days. You might be too young for this. But Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the all-time greats. But you still look back on the career and wonder, like, what if the injuries just didn't catch up with him? Like, came out of the gate so hot, 20 years old, just electric both in the field, at the plate, like the face of a generation of baseball. And it looked like trajectory-wise, the stats would be there. Like, he would challenge all of these elite records. But we are being robbed of really at 32, 33. He should still be in his prime, but he just can't get away from the injuries.
Yeah, and it's too bad. I mean, look, Mike Trout's already solidified his place in Cooperstown.
Sure.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer, no doubt about that. But like Griffey, and you know, look, I'm born in 98. So Griffey's career started in 91. I missed his Seattle time. But I still got to watch plenty of Griff in Cincinnati when he was healthy. That's, of course, where his injuries really kicked in, was his tenure with the Reds. I got to watch enough of Griffey as a kid. I started watching baseball. I was the first sport I started watching as a young kid. Like, I remember games, Dustin, vividly from being like 4 years old. Or I might have been three, and seeing Mo Vaughn hit the Budweiser sign.
Yeah.
At Shea Stadium. Do you remember that specific home run I'm talking about?
I remember being in my brother's room in my original house I grew up in New York, watching it happen on a TV like this big.
I had a TV that big in my bedroom growing up. But yeah, like Mo Vaughn hit the Budweiser sign on that scoreboard in Shea in right center field. That ball was still going up. I think it was projected 514 feet. I believe today's more accurate projections would have had that thing at 550. Like, it was one of the craziest home runs. And I was like 3 or 4 years old at that game in person. Remember it vividly. So I remember enough of Griff. And the biggest thing to your point that you just made when I talk about Griffey is that this is a guy who, I don't know if he would have caught Aaron and Bonds. If he was healthy, though, I think he would have passed Babe Ruth on the all-time home run list. And a Gold Glover, I mean, a five-tool guy. Ken Griffey Jr. deserves more credit when we talk about the all-time greatest players ever.
He would have been in 700, 100%. I mean, at age 30, He hit 40 home runs his first year in Cincinnati, and after that just could not stay on the field. 1 year he had 144 in 07, 143 in 08, but that was, you know, way late in his career where he bounced back. We're talking 70, 53, 83, 128, 109. Like, just never was available, and he just completely broke down.
How many career home runs did that give him that first year in Cincinnati? You said he was how old? 30 years old?
So, let me get the number from there.
I think Baseball Reference, you can, like, click two rows.
I got it. He had 438 after that first year in Cincinnati.
And you said that was his age 30 season?
That's what I'm saying.
Dude, yeah, he would have passed Ruth. He might have passed Aaron and Bonds. Like, he would have definitely passed Ruth on the all-time home run list.
So
it is a shame we were robbed of that.
Let's see, 438. Let's do the rest of his career, because I can't do math that well, but it's like under 200. So the rest of his career, all the things not popping up for me.
Well, how many do you have total?
630 minus 438. Oh, I got to carry numbers.
192.
One, 192. No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 190. Yeah, and that's in the entirety of his 30s. That's sad.
That's crazy. And Mike Trout's not that different. That's the point here. The point is Mike Trout came up like 20 years old, set the world on fire, was literally on the same path. And now he's going to be 33 days and he's missing another season. Like, let's see, it's 2024.
What's his contract looking like? I'm going to look up his contract.
Dude,
really
he
quick.
Hasn't played 150 games since 2016.
Since the year 16. When Babe Ruth or Home Run Baker led the league with 13 rounds.
We're talking 134 in 2019. Like, man.
And Mike Trout is signed through 2030, which will be his age 38 season. Do you think there is any chance here? He's got 6 years left after this season. Do you think there is any chance that the Angels do the right thing and cut him loose and give him a chance to go to a contender? Do you think there is any chance that teams want him given his injury history? Like, do you see him just riding out a sad career with the Angels at this point?
So here's the problem. I think the Angels would do the right thing. I think that, but unfortunately, the right thing is what Mike Trout wants. And it feels like he wants to stay there. Like, he's happy. Maybe he gets frustrated at this point, but it does feel like maybe a shift to DH or first base would keep him on the field, right?
He's a good fielder, though.
I know, but, like, you got to protect him from himself. He definitely shouldn't be in center field anymore, but I would move him to DH or first base. Like, take all of that away. Don't let him injure his legs. Just rely on that power bat to do its thing and finish your career on a contender. But I can't want something for someone that they don't want. And I actually, if he wants to just be an Angel and waste away there and that's what he wants for his career, that's perfectly fine.
I mean, if he's healthy, I'll take it because I got a chance to go see him and watch him play for cheap.
Sure.
But the thing is, whenever I go to an Angels game, he's not in the lineup.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the problem,
That's the problem.
Man, you look at this guy's career. You know what I think actually might be one of the things that jumps off the page first at me? His stolen base to caught stealing ratio. 212 to 38. I mean, that's an insane, what is that, 212 divided by 250? Guy's 85% stolen base success rate.
Yeah, that is... That I mean,
and
he was
a 40 home run guy.
But we're talking at age 27, he had 285 home runs. He's at 378 now.
Like, that means he hasn't even hit 100 in the last five. Wait, really?
Yeah.
At age 22.
285 up until 2019. That is just
93 in the last five calendar years combined.
Just absolutely soul crushing to watch this happen to an all-time great.
Well, in the last five calendar years, Dustin, he's played 319 games. That's less than two full seasons in the last five calendar years. That's sad. Hey, this was a fun week, man. I'm not back with you tomorrow, so 4 days this week. This was a lot of fun, man.
Great job.
Let's do it again sometime. For Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Joe Serallo. Don't go anywhere, though, guys. Sharp Money might be done, but VSiN Primetime up next.